I need the archive.
Laurie's gonna attend to my She leaves the room.
This is Chairman Fields. Everybody else here?
Yes, sir.
There are people in Juneau.
Okay. Let's see. What, Kenny Gallahorn?
Yes.
Keith Hamilton?
Yes.
Sue Hull?
Yes.
Kathleen? Kathleen, the present? Well, we got most of them. Alex?
Here.
Okay. Well, I suppose we could go ahead and get started and have roll call. Call meeting to order at 12:01.
First Vice Chair Hull?
Here.
Member Yar. Dr. Hamilton.
Yes.
Member Gallahorn.
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hall.
Here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Sue.
Okay.
Member Burris.
Here.
Colonel Nall.
Here.
Member Harmon.
Present.
Second Vice Chair Thompson.
Here.
Chair Fields.
Here.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. If we can all stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, I'll say the first few words and then we're on our own for okay, I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. The adoption of the agenda.
Chairman Fields, this is Member Harmon.
Yeah.
The minutes show that we unanimously passed a resolution related to minimum student count for funding, and I actually abstained from that vote. So before we adopt the agenda, I move to pull the minutes from the consent agenda so it can be updated accordingly.
Okay, if we can go ahead, we'll move that to 4B. So if you want to have a motion that basically moves that 5C minutes and makes that agenda item 4B, that would be fine.
Okay. I move that we move it to be agenda item 4B.
Chair Fields, this is Sue Hall. Technically, just the request to have it removed from the consent agenda is enough to remove it.
Okay. So,
he doesn't need a motion.
Okay, so we will move that item 5C approved the December 10th and 11th, 2018 minutes to item 4B.
Thank you, Member Hall.
Okay, we have an adoption of the agenda.
Member Harmon, with us making that change, I move that we adopt the agenda.
Second, this is Member Hall.
Okay, it's been moved and second. Any other discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Member Yar? Member Gallahorn?
Yes.
Member Harmon?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hall?
Yes.
Member Burris?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Colonel Nall?
Yes.
Chair Fields?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion has passed.
Okay, thank you. Disclosures of potential conflicts of interest at the time, if there are any board members that have any conflicts of interest with any of the agenda items that are on this this agenda. I haven't heard of any, but are there any potential conflicts of interest of any board members? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to public comment. And this is the time where the public can comment on agenda and non-agenda items. Oral hearing is limited to 3 minutes approximately per person or 5 minutes per group. And hopefully that everybody has that number that they can call in on. Let's wait till the end to engage too much on discussion with members of the public during the comment period so we can keep it moving. But keep notes if there are anything at the end you want to talk to the department about. If we can go ahead, Ms. Sipek, and start in public comment, that'd be great.
Joy Lyon with the Association of Young Children.
Hello, and thank you for allowing the public comment regarding the early learning section of the budget for this year. And I am the Association for the Education of Young Children in Southeast Alaska Executive Director. Again, my name is Joy. And I have experience with all three of the components of the early learning section, with the best beginnings Imagination Library. We've been administering that throughout Southeast Alaska. The Parents with Teachers Program, and we've been providing the assessment and consultation for the pre-K program, as you know. And so I've seen firsthand the powerful impact that these programs have in early learning. And I believe that it is unacceptable that about only half of a percent of the state funds for education are going to this very critical time period in a child's learning. So I think that's a little shocking when you look at the numbers and see that it's less than half of a percent, or it's roughly a half of a percent, to check my math. And I would urge each of you professionally and personally to be engaged in advocating for a higher investment in these early years. In an era of tight government budgets, quoting James Heckman, a laureate economist, the real question is how to use the available funds wisely. The best evidence supports the policy prescription: invest in the very young. We've seen the results from the Imagination Library. We've seen 11% gain in the incoming kindergartners' language and literacy skills. We were below the state average in Juneau, and now we are above. Parents as teachers, we've seen roughly a third of parents before participating in the program have report they have an understanding of their child's development and that they can deal with the stresses of parenthood and have positive discipline. And these scores go up to 100%, 90%, 89%. So these programs are one of the best investments that we can make. You can see on the record that a half of a percent is not adequate. So thank you for each of your dedication to education of young children and all the children, because the name of the department is the Department of Education and Early Development. And so I urge you to make that a reality of really focusing on that early development. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Next, up for public comment.
Dr. Lisa Parody.
Dr. Parody, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, members of the State Board, Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner. For the record, my name is Dr. Lisa Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, Alaska Superintendent's Association, Elementary School Principals, and School Business Officials. I want to thank you for your time to testify today. I'm here to share process and superintendent feedback, and primarily to just make sure that the feedback that was presented in the earlier legislative session was put on the record for the benefit of the State Board. I recognize the State Board members already have received this data, but understood that in order to make it a permanent record, I needed to just share it with you this morning. So it will be short. Commissioner Hanley, none of this is a surprise to him. We've been working together for the last several months trying to incorporate and understand how best to move forward from the district's perspective, and wanted to just share that the State Board's encouragement, we did create and have been working with an ASA DEED working group. We had about 17 people present from districts in our last meeting. Our first meeting was November 20th. We had 11 districts that were present. So getting the good turnout. And I think what we've had consensus about is concerns and comments around the assessment itself, what is the purpose of it, what the federal law requires, is there sufficient information from the test for improving instruction, and how do we approach a comprehensive accountability system together going forward to best benefit students. We together, I think, agreed that there were things that could be done with data and reporting. The vendor has been present and shared some good ideas in the process. So in the end, I think there was no consensus regarding next steps. I think the commissioner has shared with you and certainly with the legislature that under the law we need to do an assessment, and it's the intent of the department to administer AMP going forward. There was not consensus around doing that. However, there is definitely a recognition about if that is to be done, and the reason that that might need to be done, what steps need to be done in order to best support administration of AMP in the spring. So there's, I think, complete consensus around that piece in terms of what kinds of efforts should be taken to better administration. The second part of what I want to share with you is the results of the survey. And just so you understand the process, is after the meeting January 4th, we did do a feedback session so that the members on the Office of Working Committee could share with the statewide membership of what had taken place at the meeting. And it was the feeling from that debrief that we should do a survey to all the members to kind of get a sense of where they were feeling. From that is the survey that I have provided to you for the record, sent to the legislative hearing. There's been a couple more responses, but in a nutshell, the questions that the group wanted to ask were, does your district support continuing with the AMP assessment? 12% of the respondents said, said yes, 55% of the respondents said no, and 33% information. And I should say that I believe 43 of the 54 districts responded. So that was the response rate. And the second question was with regard to AMP, do you support keeping AMP and fixing it to be workable? 9.3% said yes. Doing away with AMP this year or pausing AMP this year, 21% said yes. Doing away with AMP next year and getting a bid out on a new assessment, 26% response yes. And then the largest majority responses were other, again, those comments that they're invited to, and they're primarily around continuing along the lines of the discussion that we had in the work group about the fix that needs to be made in terms of assessment and a comprehensive accountability system. So with that, I just appreciate your time. To speak with you today. Appreciate your efforts. This is hard territory. I know we're all working towards the same end, best for students and districts as they try to serve students. So thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Parody. Next up.
Lori Morton with the Alaska Safe Children's Act Task Force.
Good morning. My name is Lori Morton. I'm the Executive Director of the State Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I'm speaking to you today as Vice Chair of the Safe Children's Act Task Force. Thank you for taking public testimony. The task force was created last session as part of Aaron and Bree's law to provide recommendations to the Department of Education and Early Development regarding model curricula to be used by school districts. Our areas of focus include suicide prevention for staff, sexual abuse and sexual assault awareness and training and prevention for staff and students K through 12, dating violence and abuse awareness, training and prevention, staff and students 7 through 12, and alcohol and drug-related disabilities training required for teachers and staff, and alcohol drug abuse education for students K through 12. Members of the task force include representatives from the Children's Trust, the Rasmussen Foundation, Suicide Prevention Council, the department, the State House of Representatives and State Senate, Commissioner Hanley, and Ms. Thompson from your board. Over the last few months, the task force has met and received presentations from the Alaska Council of School Administrators, superintendents from both rural and urban school districts, the Alaska Children's Alliance, the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, the Association of Alaska School Boards, the Adolescent Health Coordinator with the State Division of Public Health, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, and staff from the Division of Analysis, Research, and Practice Integration with the National Centers for Disease Control. We'll continue to meet into the spring and expect to provide recommendations to the department by June 30th. I'm here to provide comments concerning your work with the Every Student Succeeds Act. At our January meeting, the task force received a broad overview of the Act, particularly with regards to Title IV Part A funding under the Safe and Healthy Students section for improving safety through recognition and prevention of coercion, violence, or abuse, including teen and dating violence, stalking, domestic violence, sexual violence and harassment, child sexual abuse awareness and prevention programs, and staff training on suicide prevention. We are heartened to learn about these funds, believing districts may be able to use them to support the implementation of task force recommended curricula, staff training, and other elements of the Alaska Safe Children's Act. We request the board and department to seek the utmost flexibility possible for districts receiving Title IV funds, including providing for the option to form consortia and other cooperative agreements across districts to plan for and implement curricula development and staff training. We believe supporting flexibility in planning for these funds will maximize the effectiveness of implementing task force recommendations at the local level, especially for districts that receive minimal amounts of Title IV Part A grant funds. Thank you for your time and consideration of these important matters. Senator Anna McKinnon sits on our task force. She was unable to be here today, but she did want to submit a letter of comments in the broader context of asking the board to consider taking on the role and relieve the burden of individual districts by finding, vetting, and recommending best practice curricula that could be available for all districts to adopt. So she asked me that I transmit her letter to you for your consideration. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next up, Ms. Ipek.
We have Kevin Shipley with the Cake City Schools online.
Chairman Field and board members, I want to thank you for hearing me today. Since your last meeting, there has been much discussion of ESSA and how it relates to the Alaskan Education Plan and our accountability system. Last month, I encouraged the State Board of Education to examine and make changes to our current accountability structure. Today, you are reviewing a part of that structure and examining the district educator evaluation system and the student learning objective requirement for teacher evaluation. The department and school districts have spent a great deal of time, money, and effort over the past 3 years working to create an effective research-based evaluation system that works for each district. For the most part, the districts have been able to provide a research-based evaluation tool that will assist them in improving teacher practices and overall performance in the classroom. However, as part of the change to the teacher evaluation system, we were asked to tie student performance to teacher evaluation. Originally, our staff was supportive of the idea to tie the evaluation to a fair and relevant growth model based on the new testing system. Over time, we have developed many questions and concerns over the reliability, relevance, and reporting accuracy with AMP and other testing systems. Currently, the growth model does not appear to be statistically relevant or an accurate way to evaluate teacher performance. In fact, a research basis for tying teacher evaluation to student performance based on the current metrics do not show that they are a fair or accurate way to evaluate teachers. While the SLO model provided by the state is a good way to look at a class's performance on a unit or concept, it does not provide a fair, consistent, or in-depth enough way to provide an adequate basis to evaluate teachers. I do not recommend throwing the baby out with the bathwater in this case and would encourage the state board to adopt regulations that would keep the research-based tools but delay or eliminate the requirement of tying the SLO or student testing data to the evaluation until adequate time has passed to find a relevant matrix that provides a statistically valid way to implement such a system. The other parts of the accountability system that I would like to briefly discuss today are the AMP test, Alaska standards, and the development of curriculum to those standards. After many meetings with the department, our board, and other administrators, I believe that it is time to develop a plan that would allow us to transition from the AMP to another test. Due to the late date, I believe that to meet federal requirements, the AMP is the best option for our students this year. But after this year, we need to work with the board, department, in conjunction with superintendents, educators, business people, and parents to create a more vibrant, long-term, an effective integrated system of standards, curriculum, instruction, evaluation, and review. In order to meet the deadlines for the required RFPs and complete the process of doing this right, we need to make a decision on the AMP and Alaska standards soon and begin to create or adapt a plan for this system so we are not stuck with our current system for yet another year. Again, let me state that I appreciate Deed and Commissioner Hanley for the large amount of work that they have put into our current system, and I would like to thank the Commissioner for his efforts in working with us over the past few months. I look forward to working with the Department and the Commissioner in the future to provide updated standards-based program that works for all Alaskans. Again, I'd like to thank you for all the hard work you do and giving me this opportunity to speak.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Shipley. Any other public comment? Ms. Sipek?
We have Superintendent Sean Dusick with the Kenai Peninsula School District.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Commissioner, State Department Administration. My name is Sean Dusick. I am the Superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to speak on two issues. First off, with the Alaska Measures of Progress, as Dr. Parody and Superintendent Shipley have already mentioned, we understand that we do have a contract to implement AMP this year. Our district does not want to waste state money by not honoring this contract, but we also have many concerns with past performance of the vendor. Our district is continuing to work with Deed to improve the overall assessment system that provides results that actually can be used to improve student learning. With ESSA and No Child Left Behind, with the requirements of a statewide assessment, we're hopeful that the department will continue to explore other assessments that best serve the needs of Alaska students, which may require immediately developing a new RFP to consider a new assessment for the spring of 2017. On the second issue I'd like to comment on, regulations related to the district's educator evaluation system, particularly with student learning objectives. With the recent reauthorization, I know that the department is trying to be very proactive in the requirements for these evaluations in the state. I support the department's recommendation to open a period of public comment on the proposed regulations with the option to repeal the student learning objective pilot requirement. As a part of our input, we would also suggest that the state require formal teacher evaluations every 3 years for teachers that successfully complete the formal evaluation process. The interim years would then be available for districts to conduct teacher enrichment evaluations that are self-directed, meaningful, and based on student learning data. This is currently embedded within the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District's Danielson system, and we have utilized this approach for many years with successful educators, and it's been very, very good. We want to continue this approach, and then we can embed student learning data within our system. We look forward to working closely with the department on reviewing and revising the entire evaluation system. Thank them for all of the hard work that has been done, and I know that they do what is in the best interest of kids. You have an excellent department. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Dusek. Any other public comment, Ms. Sipek?
Yes, we have several more, Chair Fields.
Okay.
Assistant
Hello?
Superintendent Gene Stone. With the Matsu School District.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, members of the State Board, my name is Gene Stone. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Instruction for the Matsu Borough School District. Thank you for hearing our testimony today. The Matsu Borough School District supports the repeal of 4AAC19.010, which requires districts to implement a pilot for the incorporation of student learning data during the 2015-2016 school year. The Every Student Succeeds Act recent reauthorization does not require the use of student achievement data as part of the educator evaluation process. The repeal of 4AAC19.010 will provide districts and the Department of Education and Early Development time to more effectively construct usable and reasonable student achievement measurements. In theory, using student achievement data sounds like a very reasonable idea. In practice, it's quite different. to meet the requirement of growth measure, objective and measurable criteria that can be given multiple times in the course of a study must be used. Once fully implemented, teachers would be required to have 2 to 4 measures for their evaluation. For many of our teachers, this requirement is reasonable. For example, MAPSU requires all students in grades 2 through 8 to take NWEA's math assessment in the fall and spring in reading, language usage, and math. Even in our core subjects such as Algebra 1, Chemistry, or U.S. History, we have district-wide adopted textbooks with pre- and post-assessments that would be a valid measure. Not only are these reasonable practices, but they are already in place in our schools. Teachers and administrators use student learning data to drive their instruction and improve their practices. Measuring academic progress in elective courses such as PE, music, woodshop, it's much more difficult, and we're left with fewer options. Do we create extensive paper and pencil common assessments? Do we pick isolated metrics such as how many musical notes can a student read at the beginning of the semester versus the end, or perhaps how fast they run the mile or how many sit-ups they can do? It becomes even more challenging when you look at metrics for teachers that work in our homeschool programs or librarians or teachers working in special assignment positions at the district level. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Next up.
Margaret Bauer with the Alaska Early Child Advocacy Group.
Good afternoon, Commissioner and board members. Thank you for this opportunity. I am Margaret Bauer. I am calling from Anchorage, and I am the chair of the Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group, and calling today just to talk about the disappointment we have as the budget cuts to Best Beginnings Pre-K and parents as teachers. The Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group will continue to be united in advocating and ensuring that the state investment in early childhood programs benefit our Alaska children and families. Best Beginnings, Pre-K, and Parents as Teachers are all investments that have been critical to the success of supporting children and families across the state. While all have been new investments during the last 10 years, each program strengthens the essential infrastructure for Alaska's both today and in the future. Alaska now has data and outcomes coupled with national research and data establishing the kinds of practices that can help sustain gains children have made in their early learning settings. In addition to the gains of individual children, investments in early childhood result in great gains for all Alaskans. As the session continues, we hope that you will continue to join us in advocating for continued early childhood funding through DEED. Additionally, we encourage you to do federal funding that can leverage our state investments as opportunities to be innovative and creative during these tough economic times. Specifically, we encourage you to consider the coming U.S. Department of Education preschool development grant opportunity, which would strengthen and leverage pre-K funding in Alaska. Again, thank you for your time and for your service and all the work that you're all doing.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bauer. Next up.
Superintendent Bob Crumley from the Chugach School District.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Bob Crumley, and I serve as the superintendent of the Chugach School District. I'd like to thank you for allowing this opportunity to provide input on the important topic of the teacher evaluation system. While it's easy to understand the well-intentioned actions to improve and add more objectivity to our teacher evaluation processes in the state, I believe the current regulation does not achieve those good intentions in a healthy manner. I applaud the State Board of Education for considering repeal of this regulation, which ties teacher evaluation to student performance on state exams. As many Alaska educators learned at the RTI conference this past weekend in Anchorage, the root of the word assessment comes from the Latin word accedere, which I'm mispronouncing because I don't know Latin, but it's supposed to mean to sit beside. Assessing professionals by sitting beside them, understanding the context in which they work, understanding the challenges they face, and providing guidance and support for improvement is a far more respectful and professional assessment process than this regulation allows, and increased respect for our professional teachers is something our state and our nation is sorely in need of. Assessing teachers using student performance data from state exams brings many questions to the surface. The primary purpose of student assessments at a state level is to measure student performance. When we take that data intended to measure one thing and we begin measuring another thing with it, statisticians will tell us we're on a slippery slope. When using the ELA and the math test data to measure ELA and math teacher performance, it's a secondary use of that data. It's once removed from the original intent. When using the student ELA and math test data to measure teacher performance in other content areas, such as social studies, career, and tech.
Okay, but you still have her in queue. Okay, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Sorry, Charlie, go ahead, Bob. Is the conversation going on behind
you? Oh, am I back on?
You're on. You're on. Yep.
Okay. Did I?
We heard everything. It was just a side conversation, I think, because there's some people that can't necessarily hear. So
okay.
Go ahead and continue.
All right. I'm going to pick up my phone instead of use that. That may help. Okay. So using the ELA and the math state test data to measure teacher performance in the other content areas, such as social studies, career and tech, physical education, and art, is a tertiary use of student state test data. It's twice removed from the original intent. We know Alaska is in the midst of developing our state student assessment system that will provide an accurate, valid, and reliable set of student data. I contend that the majority of Alaskan educators right now believe that our state student assessment system has not yet reached the maturity level necessary to provide valid and reliable student data. We certainly aren't ready to provide student growth data. Therefore, making high-stakes career decisions about teacher performance based on this data is premature, let alone disrespectful. Repealing this regulation is definitely the correct action to take. When this regulation was enacted, I was clear with our staff that we would be making some changes to our performance evaluation process. We call it the PEP. Not because new regulations were requiring it, but we were making changes to strive to continuously improve the services we provide to our students. I told our teachers we'd meet the letter of the law when updating the PEP, but we wouldn't let the tail wag the dog. It was clear that we would remain focused on developing a PEP that helps us sit beside each teacher and respectfully guide them towards improved practices. Our focus would remain on more effectively meeting our student needs. I'm proud to say we've maintained this focus, and I am encouraged by the prospect of this regulatory change allowing districts across Alaska to do the same. Thank you for your service and your time.
Thank you. Next up.
Tammy Van Wy with the Copper River School District on behalf of Superintendent Johnson.
Chair Field, Board. This is Tammy Van Wy, Director of Teaching and Learning Support for the Copper River School District, and I will be reading testimony prepared by Superintendent Michael Johnson, who is unable to participate in the audio today. Chair Fields and members of the State Board, thank you for the opportunity to give testimony. I offer my testimony today with respect for Commissioner Hanley and his staff, who have worked very hard over the past 2+ years on introducing the Alaska Measures of Progress. Despite their efforts, AMP did not go as planned. As Commissioner Hanley noted last week, there have been problems with the development, administration, and reporting associated with AMP. The difficulty now is that this tool that was designed to measure students' achievement in Alaska has become all knotted up. When the development string is pulled, it only tightens up the reporting string. And when we try to untangle the reporting string, it restricts the administration portion of the knot. Given enough time and attention, we could eventually untangle the knot, but therein lies the challenge. We don't have the time, and our attention needs to be focused elsewhere. And we don't need to untangle the knot, as there are other measures already developed that we can use to inform the public and give teachers the data they need to understand how our students are performing. It is unfortunate, but rather than focus attention on the need to improve student achievement, AMP has resulted in focusing attention on the assessment itself. If we are not deliberate and focus our attention on ESSA, the new federal education law, we will find ourselves with an even bigger knot. If we are distracted, the knot of federal regulation will trip us up, and we'll find ourselves bound by policies that may not fit Alaska's unique school districts. Rather than take the path of least resistance and infuse our education system with a bland and pasty serving of education policy based on the bureaucracy of Washington, D.C., let's spend the next few months focused on developing education policy that reflects a culture, courage, and common sense of Alaska, from Barrow to Bartlett High and Kivalina all the way over to Ketchikan. Our education policy should not leave an aftertaste of federal government in our mouth. Rather, our education policies, including assessments, should be designed to use ESSA to bring out the unique flavor of Alaskan values from Barrow and Bartlett High and from Kivalina to Ketchikan. Therefore, based on where I think our attention should be in this time of federal education policy transition, I have suggested to Commissioner Hanley that this spring should be the last administration of the AMP, and our time and effort should be expended on making sure we apply this new federal law wisely and based on Alaskan values. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Van Wy. Next up.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for serving members of the State Board of Education, and thank you for taking my testimony today. My concerns go back to the point that the state statute states that DEED cannot spend money to implement a set of standards based on the Common Core. Even on the DEED website, it states that Alaska standards are the same as the CCSS, the Common Core State Standards or College and Career Ready Standards, except the only changes are for clarity. When you get into the assessing, so now the AMP assessments, which I was told by Commissioner Hanley, are the exact same assessments that are being used on the official adoption of Common Core in the Anchorage School District, those same AMP tests are being used statewide. As a legislator, it raises deep concerns in the direction of education. I've said for quite some time that AMP is a big experiment. It's a very expensive, costly experiment, and I don't understand why we are pushing forward with AMP again this year when so many concerns are being raised on so many different levels. With that, I just wanted to let you know that I'm very concerned about what's going on, but I really want to work with you guys, and I do thank you very much for listening and for your service.
Thank you, Representative Reinbold.
We have one more, Glenn Case with the Alaska Policy Forum.
Hello? Yeah, sorry, it's David Meese. I don't know how they changed my name. I am speaking for Alaska Policy Forum today. We were taking a look at item number one on your agenda, which is the 2017 DEED operating budget. And we would like to note that in 2014, your deferred maintenance was about $1.7 million, your capital projects. There were no schools on the capital projects, and then there was part of the Kasili settlement with the Kulikna school, I believe it is. In 2015, last year in January meeting, the budget that you were working with was a working document. In other words, the board did not have in front of it the actual budget for the department until March. And I think you should probably look at your budget this year as a working document. I would be a little concerned with some of the items that are in the document. If you look at page 12 in your maintenance grants, you have several maintenance grants in there. There is an $11.2 million major maintenance grants, which essentially rebuilds an entire school, because when it says the envelope, the exterior envelope, and the interior walls, they might be leaving the framing up, but that was a school that was up for a bond, and when the legislature stopped the debt reimbursement, it looks like this one has been put back in there so they continue on the project. Okay, the Kachemek Solo School, which serves 63 children, or 108, We can't tell. The paper is reporting 63. Their application shows 108, which would put them higher up on the list if it's an incorrect number they're working with. That's a $10 million school for 63 kids in a borough. Again, you're building a school that is not a maintenance item, and that's a grant. They don't get any money back on that one. Kivalina has another $7.2 million, and I don't know if that is part of last year's legislative settlement or it's additional. Your debt reimbursement, which is subject to annual legislative review, is $122 million this year. If you guys as a board would say that we are kind of broke and we can afford to only pay you back $1 million each year, that would save you $99 million in your budget. A couple of the items that were cut and are subject in your budget, like pre-K, probably should have some reference material with them. The pre-K pilot program never had a report from Commissioner Morse indicating whether it was working or not, because the children kept changing all the time. So it's very difficult to see if something's working if you don't get reports on it. I know it's part of ESSA that they want to include pre-K back in, so looking at the pre-K information and having some from your own data would help a lot. Basically, you have a working document for a budget that may or may not reflect the board's values of where they want the money in education going. And you have some items. If you take a look at your deferred maintenance list, and remember that the court settlement for Kafili said that in your REAA districts, they have to submit to the Department of Education, here's what we've been doing for maintenance, this is what's failed, we'd like to replace it, and everything seems to be in a reimbursement mode. In outside of REAAs, it seems to be that the projects are, we would like the money so we can build it. So instead of being in a reimbursement mode, and it's the same issue you had with transportation, went away from reimbursement. If the money is coming in and they just have to apply with it, you're going to end up with more people lining up for money. And at this time, you have $231 million in deferred maintenance projects lined up. So I would encourage the board to think about possibly taking over the same kind of maintenance reporting system you're using for REAs for borough and city school districts in order to kind of keep the maintenance, because it comes down to the state has to maintain the system of schools, and the judge interpreted it as maintaining the schools. If you're not asking all your schools to give you the same maintenance information, you're not going to get a prioritized list that would be actually a good list to work with. And when you are constructing new schools and you're saying it's maintenance, that's an issue. So we have a couple issues with the budget that probably should be addressed before you approve it. And you could look at it as a working document and defer it till March to get your questions answered. Appreciate the time, and thank you for all for serving on the board.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Neese. Any other public comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we've had a couple last-minute additions. We have Stephanie Berglund. She's the CEO of Thread.
Okay.
Hello, thank you, board members. I'm Stephanie Berglund, the CEO of Thread, Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Network, and also a partner member of the Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group. And I'm calling today in to comment on the proposed budget, and in specifically the proposed cuts to early childhood programs in the FY17 budget. And it's disappointing to see that critical early learning programs, including funding for pre-K, Best Beginnings, and Parents as Teachers, were zeroed out of the budget when Alaska is already severely behind in our support and systems for early childhood education and support. Research shows that participation in quality early childhood programs has long-term gains for all children, yet only 1 in 5 children benefit from some participation in some level of early childhood services in Alaska. Moreover, science tells us that during the first 3 years of life, the brain undergoes extraordinary development as children are acquiring the ability to think, speak, learn, and reason.
As you are well aware, in Alaska, about 7,000 children repeat a grade between kindergarten and high school, and it is far more expensive to intervene during the K-12 years to keep a child on track than it is early on. The Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group continues to be united in advocating for ensuring that the state investments in early childhood programs benefit our Alaska children and families. So I encourage you to reconsider funding for Best Beginnings, Pre-K, and Parents as Teachers, as all are investments critical to the success of supporting children and families across the state. Each of these programs strengthens essential infrastructure for Alaskans, both for today and in the future. We now have the data and outcomes coupled with national research and data that establish the kind of practices that can help sustain gains children have made in their early learning settings. In addition to the gains of individual children, investments in early childhood result in great gains for all Alaskans. I encourage you to invest more in early childhood funding in the department's budget. Additionally, I encourage you to consider federal funding that's now available and can leverage our state investments as opportunities to be innovative and creative during these tough economic times. Specifically, I hope you'll consider the upcoming U.S. Department of Education Preschool Development Grant opportunity, which would strengthen and leverage pre-K funding available in Alaska. Thank you again for your time and your service.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Berglund. Any other public comment?
Yes, we have Dr. Dina Faremo with the Matson School District.
Okay.
Hello, this is Dr. Promo from Matson Brough School District, also representing the school board. I appreciate being able to testify today. The conversation regarding the AMP assessment reminds me of the story by Hans Christian Andersen, The Emperor's New Clothes. In the story, there was an emperor who loved wearing new clothes and spent all of his people's money on those new clothes. One day, two weavers entered the kingdom and proclaimed that they were capable of making the finest, lightest, most magnificent clothes the world had ever seen. The emperor paid the two weavers a large sum of money and sent his finest advisors to monitor the weavers' progress as they were making the emperor's new clothes. The advisors consistently reported back to the emperor that the weavers were making great progress and that the new clothes were magnificent, when in fact the weavers were not making clothes at all. The clothes were invisible. When the clothes were finished, the emperor paraded in front of his kingdom in his new clothes and everyone applauded. No one was willing to stand up to the emperor. It took a child to say, wait a minute, the emperor has no clothes. AMP has no clothes. I listened to the commissioner's testimony last week and was taken by surprise as he and others tried to defend the AMP assessment, even though by deeds on admission, the AMP does not provide actionable data. What also struck me as unbelievable was the premise that the Achievement and Assessment Institute, or AAI, is going to further develop the AMP assessment to meet our needs, despite the fact that early results have been less than encouraging, and there's been numerous disappointments. As the superintendent of the second largest school district in Alaska, DEET expects me to allow a testing company from another state to use my students as test subjects over the course of the next 5 years while they develop an assessment that in the end may or may not be of use. Meaningful learning data that can be of use or actionable data is data that a teacher can use to adjust instruction immediately after the assessment to help students reach specific learning targets. For everyone's information, the SBA was also not a source of actionable data. The SBA data typically arrived during the late spring or summer and was delivered to a school in August, in which time teachers would review to see how students did the previous year. That is why Matson Brough School District started using the Measures of Academic Progress, or MAP, 11 years ago. The MAP assessment provides inexpensive, actionable data that is norm referenced to national standards and will soon meet federal reporting guidelines. Our biggest concern in the Matson Brough is that the AMP assessment has a negative influence over our MAP assessment results because it adds to the amount of time it takes a student sitting in front of a computer to take a test. This is notwithstanding the paralysis that occurs to advancing instruction with technology while our computers are fully occupied for 5 to 6 weeks during the assessment window of AMP. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been down this road. We have spent many years testing kids since the beginning of No Child Left Behind and denying diplomas based on standardized assessments, only to realize at the end that we had harmed many students and families without any conceivable benefit. In his book, Conflicting Landscapes, Father Michael Oleska stated that after observing 35 years of attempts to educate Alaska's children, he has come to the conclusion that the educational community might just be doing harm. Meaningless assessments that are not connected to learning targets do harm. I want to be very clear, speaking on behalf of the Matsu Borough School District and its Board of Education, we do not have confidence in AMP. We believe it does harm. The AMP assessment has been a failed venture from the beginning, and $25 million is far too much to spend on an assessment that does not provide us with usable learning data. I call on everyone involved in this conversation to demonstrate courageous leadership and do what is right for Alaska's children before we rush down a road that is certain to involve unintended consequences that squander valuable resources during a time of budgetary challenges. If we are going to test, and yes, we should test, let's make sure the test has value to students and educators. This is why I emphatically and respectfully request to use the MAP assessment to meet state and federal mandated testing requirements and to continue providing the educators, parents, and students of Matsu Borough School District with a meaningful learning assessment they can trust. Thank you for your time and energy on this endeavor.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Bramo. Any other public comment?
Superintendent Stuart McDonald with the Kodiak School.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Fields. This is Stuart McDonald and State Board. I'm over at the LIO office and had a chance to step out of our busy day and take time to speak about this particular matter. It's very important to all of us. We are working with the commissioner on the assessment of state testing. Under the new ESSA rules is the light that I'd like shined on this working group, and this work needs to continue. You've already heard many people speak, I'm sure, of their strongly held beliefs about a state's assessment and where we need to go. As a pragmatist, I recognize where the state Department of Ed is, and we do need some short-term fixes regarding reports and alignment for monitoring progress between the FY15 and FY16 administrations of the AMP. We also need an intermediate plan between now and the FY17 administration while we consider a state assessment that meets Alaska's needs beyond minimal federal requirements. You just heard some testimony about the MAP test and what the fundamental pieces of a test like that is a district needs a formative assessment process that can link to national comparative norms and build district-wide norms to have meaningful instructional input to influence classroom instruction and make a difference for students' learning. A state test that is in agreement with that formative system and brings a summative, elegant message is important, and that ties together to actually help us rate a school's progress and make informed decisions. Right now, we have a state test that was built more around a federal requirement and less around the bigger picture of instructional integrity to give us everything we need for our students, and that's why a test like MAP makes sense. MAP may not be the only test out there, but until we have a good RFP, a good plan, and a good statewide elegant system, I also, speaking on behalf of our board and myself and other superintendents that I would like to call in, we would like the right to district to district be able to select an ambitious test that has a high expectation and high rigor against high standards to be able to meet our student instructional needs, all under the allowable ideas under ESSA. With that, I thank the Department of Ed and the superintendents across the state that are diligently working to serve Alaska's children. We're working together. Let's keep this work moving. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comment, Ms. Lipek?
We have Deborah Lowe, the Dean of School of Education in Juneau.
Okay.
She's got an extra
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. She is not giving public testimony. Chair Fields, we have a small housekeeping thing if we could mention. The LIO has been experiencing problems with their phone operator today, and they have 5 legislative sessions getting ready to start. So we need to ask anyone that is not a board member to please hang up and tune in on the AKATV website.
Okay.
So if everybody could do that, the legislative session takes precedence over our meeting.
Okay, thank you. So are we done with public comment then?
Yes, we are.
Okay, great, thank you. And thank you for all those that called in for public comment and informed us on what's important to you and the issues that you see. Are there any comments from board members regarding public comment?
Chairman Fields, this is Member Harmon.
Yeah.
Related to the testimonies we've just heard in public comment, I'd like to ask the commissioner a couple questions, if I may.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, first question regards AMP, and I guess based on the testimony we've heard today, what are DEED's plans regarding AMP for this spring and for the future so everyone's clear?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you for the opportunity. For the record, this is Commissioner Handley. The SSA has opened up a lot of doors for us, and we need to actively pursue going through those. We need to pursue every bit of flexibility that we can get in regards to, in a lot of ways, especially in regards to some of the assessments that the federal government is stepping back from. We need to step in and take control of Alaska's system. They're still working on regulations, but I do want you to know that I signed a statement that I submitted to go to the U.S. Department of Ed in regards to this. The last part of that statement says, one size fits all does not work for Alaska. This is particularly true for student assessments. We strongly encourage allowing states maximum flexibility to use multiple student assessment tools, with local school districts having the option to select the best tool to measure the progress of their students. So I don't know how, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get all the way there, but I think that is speaks to our vision for maximum flexibility for Alaska. So what I testified to the other day and what I shared with the superintendent's group a couple weeks ago was that right now we are still under No Child Left Behind. Our waiver is intact or in place until August 1st. We are still mandated, and I think at the last legislative hearing, Lee Posey from the National Council of State Legislatures, as well as conversations we had with Brian Gong, a national assessment expert, both said that there is no break from our requirement to assess students annually. So to do that, we still are required to do a summative exam this spring. With only about, let's see, February, March, with only about 2 months prior to that, there are no physical options for us to insert another exam, train up our DTCs, and train up our school districts for this spring. But with that said, I thought the points made today were powerful, and actually I'm in agreement of. The only one I wasn't in agreement with was that I defended AMP at the last legislative hearing. I mean, my first statement there was that I'm not here to defend AMP. There's nobody more frustrated with AMP than I am and my staff is. So if we are stuck, it's with an assessment that we have to give this spring with really no other options to still meet the law, so we're stuck with AMP for this spring, we can't wait until we're done with that before we start pursuing another route for our next assessment. We need to do that now. And so I've already begun some conversations on where do we go from here. I'm really not interested in continuing down a path that's not working. We need to choose the path that's going to be best for Alaska. So I've started conversations. I would really like to start those conversations maybe with a working group that Chair Fields puts together with a couple of state board members to start setting this path so that even though we're going to move forward with AMP this spring, utilizing the changes that superintendents offered up at our last meeting. I sent those to the board in my update the other day. Making as many changes as we can to make it as good as possible, but let's not wait and let's pursue a new path forward from there. So does that answer your question, Member Harmon?
I believe it does, and I think for the folks that may not be aware, my understanding, Commissioner, and you can confirm if this is correct or not, is the challenge we have under the waiver is that if we don't continue an assessment that we were given a waiver for, that could jeopardize our title funds. Is that my understanding of why we're not doing something sooner based on, even though the ESSA is out, correct?
Yes, ESSA doesn't come into play yet, and it's not just our waiver. There are a couple of components that didn't change in the waiver. We still had a requirement to assess our students with a summative statewide assessment annually. So that part didn't change, but you're absolutely right. One, it's federal law. Two, we have an annual requirement in state law. And the repercussions of that is we put, not only violating the law, but we put our title funds at risk.
Commissioner, personally, I'd like to be more flexible, but I do understand the constraints that the department's under. And I do have two other questions, if I may, and they're not related to AMP. I can wait if other board members have AMP questions and then continue on to a budget question based on the testimony that was provided.
Yeah, any other AMP discussion?
Yeah, Chair Fields, this is Sue Hull. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I just was checking. I have a question to follow up. I believe the commissioner's right that likely we need to administer AMP in accordance with the terms of the waiver, but I wonder if there might be the possibility of asking, at least asking the question of the U.S. Department of Education related to the possibility for districts that see AMP as a waste of time for their students, and in light of the overall state frustration within the department as well as with other districts, in light of the frustration and sense that maybe it's a waste of time for their students, to ask if there might be some flexibility. And I do that with some grounds in the Dear Colleague letter that related to the transition from ESEA to ESSA. There's a paragraph about general ESEA flexibility and an update to that. And within that paragraph, there's a sentence that indicates that, they will not continue on the current schedule related to waiver requests or flexibility within the waiver request. But then it says EB will continue to make decisions on a case-by-case basis, but generally speaking, we'll prioritize monitoring and enforcement on principles that are included in both the ESEA and ESSA. So that, to me, opens the door for at least having a conversation with the U.S. Department of Education about the possibility of continuing with the AMP this spring for those districts that choose to take it, for those districts that would prefer to use tools that they may already have in place, in light of the overall state frustration, in light of the fact that the state is pursuing a different course for future years that would be more in keeping with ESSA, it seems to me that there's a possibility the Department of Education might allow more of a transition if we were to request it. And even if the question, even if the answer that comes back is no, I think it's worth asking the question because, as was raised by at least one of the superintendents who spoke, it is, it ties up a lot of their student time, their computers that could be used for other instructional uses, et cetera. And so for those districts that might choose to submit another assessment, that perhaps there's that possibility. So I guess I just want to raise the notion of at least asking the question.
Member Hull, we think alike, and I'm one step ahead of you. My call in with Secretary King, John King, we were unable to connect due to the storm in Washington, D.C., both on Friday, and then they're still trying to regroup today. So we're working on that connection right now, but for that exact reason. Not only that, but flexibility with local districts, but flexibility in regards to a pause, because I know that there were questions around that as well. So I'm definitely pursuing that already, but thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome. Thanks. Glad you were ahead of it.
Okay, any other comments on the AMP discussion, the SSA?
Yeah, James, Member Gallagher, I just want to comment. I agree with everything, and I second what Member Hull just said, and I might even go a step farther by saying maybe we ought to challenge the federal government a little bit. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? I have a few, but I'm going to wait till the end.
Hi, this is Kathleen. I finally got in. I just kind of feel that the well has been poisoned as far as the AMP goes, and that I don't know if there's any recovering it anymore, because it has now such a bad reputation amongst administrators and, you know, other people. So that's my only comment.
Okay, thank you. Any other? On a few notes, this is Chairman Fields. On a few notes, Commissioner Hammond, you said we can't wait to figure out next year. I paraphrase, of course, but we talk about creating a working group. When I look at this, there's two things. You have ESSA, and we've talked about this. We have an ESSA that should probably set up a subcommittee, which of course the ESSA actually wants us to get involvement and work groups across, you know, businesses. Lisa Parity mentioned it, businesses and teachers, parents, other stakeholders. So we have the ESSA, which I think would be good to set up a subcommittee on that, what the flexibilities may be, what does that look like moving forward? And then also we have the AMP/assessment solution that you currently obviously have a working group that of superintendents that you're working with. So I think there's some flesh there already, and maybe it's a matter of taking that working group and seeing who is interested in one or the other, taking maybe some legislative aid, getting some other parties involved, and we have two separate working groups that obviously will somewhat be working together but apart, really trying to quickly parse through where we're at. Obviously the department's going to be directly involved. What are your feelings on those?
Thanks, Chair Fields. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, the AMP, a new assessment, falls under the requirements for the stakeholder input for a state plan. But that does make sense. Interestingly, there are constituent groups that are required under ESSA, so that will be a process that it might look like a subgroup, but it'll be an advisory group, and it'll be relatively large in regard to the ESSA component. But it doesn't mean we can't be working with some smaller working groups to lay some foundations, kind of set some directions as we walk into the larger ESSA group. So you're right in recognizing the fact that there are quite a few moving parts to get us where we need to be.
Okay. So we can talk about that more. I just wanted to make sure we touched on it so board members would be aware and it's on the record. The other issue is really with AMP, and obviously a lot of comments about administering it in the future. I think it's a good idea. We'll administer it this year. I think Sean Dusek brought up the fact does not want to waste state money. Yeah, we have a contract through June of this year, so I think it'd be wise to at least, at a minimum, those that wish to take it should take it at a minimum. And if there is no other option, everyone should, just because at least it gives us some type of data to work around. The other issue really is figuring out what's happening next year and what's the department's feelings. I don't want to say it's on a scale of 1 to 10 about where they feel in the way of AMP compared to another assessment. I mean, you want to start the working group so you can talk through that. But obviously, you guys are in it. You guys are feeling the heat from all over the place. My tendency is to weigh towards, okay, we have a contract that's up June 30th. We go into a new RFP, and maybe AI gets it again. Maybe they don't. But opening that door so we're not – you got another hearing coming up on Wednesday this week. What are your feelings on that and coming out and having some strong language that way?
I'm trying to go back to, you were talking about a scale of 1 to 10, and I agree that we need to definitely look. I think that from here to our next assessment, I think our hands are tied. Even if we wanted to, and it's not just about a contract, it's about federal laws. It's not just about state money, but it's about federal money that we would be putting at risk and following the law, which I think we have a responsibility to do. So that path is a little more clear. But if I were to try to see what looking forward beyond that is, I have a hard time picturing people rallying around AMP. I have a hard time picturing me defending AMP and moving us towards AMP. But I'm not going to sit here as one person and say this is what we're going to do or not going to do. We've got a lot of pathways forward. ESSA opens up summative, opens up interim, opens up pilot projects. I think there's a lot of opportunities. We heard a lot of conversations around MAP. That's that interim model, whether it turns out to be MAP or not, but that is the interim model that seems to be very supportive. Obviously, if we're going to go that way, it can't be AMP. AMP is a summative test, not an interim test. So does that answer your question? My crystal ball doesn't work real well beyond this spring, but I want to pursue with our stakeholders the best path forward. And I'm just hearing extensive concern, and the same concern I have around hanging on to AMP.
Okay, so at this point, so I guess the follow-up question would be, when do we have to jump in for a new contract with AMP? What is there a drop-dead date? Do you have that, or for another year? If
private school,
it's June. It's that window. Now, granted, if we want to. We have a renewable option basically every June 30th, July 1, in that window there.
Okay, so they don't have to have it 60 days prior to that date. It's up to that date.
Correct. We have a contract with them until then.
Okay. Okay. I think I can read between the lines there, so thank you. And any other AMP questions?
Yes, James, this is Barbara.
Yeah.
As much as it's obvious that AMP is not supported and we'll be looking at other options and have other flexibility with the implementation of the new ESSA, again, I just see no other option to meet the letter of the state and federal laws to do a summative assessment other than the AMP. So I don't see flexibility in allowing districts for this spring assessment to choose other options. I don't know that they have summative assessments sitting around that, I mean, if we're going to move, but at least we should do the best we can to get some data back, helpful data back to districts as has been promised, and then make a transition to whatever we are going to move to because we now have lot more flexibility.
Right. Yeah, and I would agree. The feeling I get from around the state is everybody's holding their breath. And so if the department, I would hope that the department be the one that suggests it. If the department at some point can come out and say, we're gonna administer AMP this year, but we're going into an accelerated RFP process looking at next year, and it may or may not be AAI, but we're looking to not renew the contract, that would take the air out of the room. And so that's really what I'm looking for, and I'm just speaking on my – this is just a personal opinion, one board member, but that's really what I'm looking for, just so people can take a deep breath and we can move past this and look to the future and, you know, give everyone some hope and, you know, not – so they don't die holding their breath.
So. James, I think we're definitely moving in that direction, but I don't want to say here that we're going to move into an RFP process simply because we need that stakeholder input. And I think I've heard it, but we need these groups. I need to sit down with folks and say, okay, what does an RFP look like? Which way are we going to go? And that's why I'm hesitant. I mean, that's been a concern in the past, that people felt like they didn't have input and they didn't have a say. I surely feel it's going that way, but I don't want to sit here and make that unilateral decision that that's where we're going and have everybody say, you know, try to catch up to me. So I just think it's prudent to make sure that we're doing it together and not with me doing it individually.
Okay. Sounds good. And I'm sure this week we'll talk and try to get these working groups and obviously deal with the current working group you have and try to work through that process the best way. So thank you for the discussion. Any other on this subject? Okay. Member Harmon, you had another question on the budget?
Yeah. And again, this is based on the testimonies that were presented today. And I think the first question, it's more just information for me, and I'll put actually for the commissioner two questions together. So with the reduction or the cutting of funding for the early childhood, I guess if maybe you could explain the rationale behind that. And then the second piece, and this goes to, I think, Mr. Neese's testimony, and I am the newest member of the board here, just the board's role as it relates to again, I haven't been involved. I don't know what the board's involvement in the process is for the budget. You know, is the chairman involved? Has it been? And how that works. So I guess that's one question, then I have a follow-on after that.
Chair Fields, may I offer a suggestion? I'd be glad to answer the questions now, but it may be prudent to walk through and
we can wait till we get to the budget section. That's fine.
And that's where we're at now. We're ready for that item, but I'll leave that up to you, Chair Fields, if you want to have the questions prior, if you want to have the presentation.
Yeah, no, that sounds fine to me. And unless Member Harmon, do you have another comment that's outside of the budget, or?
No. AMP and the budget were the two ones that came up in the public comment that I just wanted to comment on. AMP wasn't on our agenda, so I'm glad we had this discussion. And I think, Chairman Fields, I'm in line with you as it relates to direction and as it relates to the budget. Since that is a topic on our agenda, it makes sense that we ask those in that point. So I can wait until after the presentation.
Okay, great. Any other comments on public comment? If not, we'll move into
Chair Fields, this is Sue Hall. Just quickly, if the commissioner could update us regarding the request made about the department vetting curricula, et cetera, to assist districts as they respond to the new law that relates to training. I think there are a lot of districts with that question. If he could clarify what the department's intention is, or if that's something that needs to be brought to the attention of the department.
Chair Fields and Sue, right now both Barbara and I are on the HB 44 task force, and the goal of that task force is to bring recommendations to the department. And so we've both been very active in what resources those are. There's been a lot of aspects, as Lori spoke to, different components of it. How are they vetted, best practices, financial considerations. So just by the two of us being on that task force, we've been engaged, but what you heard today from Lori was kind of the first update kind of to the board in general. So we're working with the task force, but we're also waiting for official recommendations that are going to come to the department on how to incorporate those resources. Interestingly, we do have a lot, both Todd Grotius,
Sharon Fischel
and Patty Owen have been there with our staff. They've actually been providing a lot of resources. We have a lot of online training programs that are going to be a part of those recommendations that are already in place. Did that answer your question?
That's what I was looking for. I knew that you were on the task force, et cetera, and that there would be recommendations coming, but I was also aware, I thought, that the department was moving to provide some of that assistance that she requested today. Thanks.
And this is Barbara. To speak to that, assistance will be provided and is being provided through the online training courses, but also assistance and with the new ESSA Title IVA funding, which may be used in part, may be used to fulfill the requirements that have come down through HB 44. so there is a possibility that those funds can be used by districts to implement the curricula training that will be recommended.
And this is Member Harmon. I just have a quick question based on this discussion. We've referenced the task force. Who's on this task force? So just so I'm familiar.
The task force was statutorily defined on who would be on it. We have
Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, Suicide Prevention. We have two legislators on the committee. The Children's Trust, the Department of Education, the State Board of Education, and the Rasmussen Foundation.
Great, thank you, thank you. And that's a wonderful group, so thank you.
Okay, any other comments on public comment? Okay, we'll move into our first item, Department's FY 2017 Operating and Capital Budgets. Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair Field. I'll just introduce it, and we have Heidi Techner here, our Admin Services Director, that will walk us through that. The first two bullets on the cover page of that item really speak to how this works, and Member Harmon was talking, referencing that. And it says that the Commissioner for the Department of Education has the responsibility and authority for preparing and executing the budget. The development of the education budget is part of the annual executive budget process, but it is also subject to the approval of the State Board. Interestingly, then, if you look at the next bullet, that the work that I do as I start preparing a budget is subject to guidance given to me from the governor's office through OMB, and they issue instructions on how all agencies, including the Department of Education, will develop that, will submit that to OMB, so that it can be considered in the governor's overall budget. So it is an interesting dynamic of how this all comes together, because although David Neese spoke to this being, we should consider it a working document, well, this is the result of, this is the governor's budget that sits before us now. This is what he put forward as he was mandated by December 15th. So this is a result of me working on a budget with my staff, following the instructions coming from OMB to submit things, and the governor drafting what we have before us. So, but it is still subject to the approval of the State Board. So that's the dynamic that we'll walk into, and Heidi will walk through the budget with us, and then I'm sure we'll have questions about it.
For the record, this is Heidi Techner, Director of Administrative Services for the Department. And I'll just highlight a few things in the cover page that the FY17 operating budget is reflecting a $9 million UGF reduction from undesignated general funds when compared to our FY16 management plan. The reductions are outlined in the cover memo and will be discussed in detail in the pages that follow. I'll just move right into that document during time. So page one of the budget document kind of gives you an outline between our K-12 formula. At the very top, you have a chart for a K-12 formula program versus agency operations through all four funding sources, designated general funds, undesignated general funds, federal funding, and other funding. For new members, other funding consists of interagency receipts, statutory designated program receipts, and the Alaska Student Loan Corporation receipts. Those are just some examples of what you'd find in there. By fund source, the budget is mainly comprised of 84% is general funds, 14% is federal funding, and 2% is other. So when you just look at the...
Can you repeat that, those percentages one more time? I started writing and I didn't get them all. My apologies.
And that is in the first chart on the top row on the left side.
Got it. Thank you.
Just so you know. And there is a typo, and I apologize for that. It should say FY17 agency operations by fund source. You can see that we have, just in our agency operations, 58% is federal funding. So that's a bigger chunk. of our agency is federally funded. We're only 20% is general fund and 12% is other. The chart in the middle shows the FY17 budget just for the general fund. So we have 4% of our general fund is our agency operations. It's about $63 million. 96% is the K-12 formula program, which all goes out the door. And by line item, the last chart on the bottom of page one gives you a breakdown of how it is broken out by line item. And 95% goes to grants, 2% is personal services, and 3% is other lines. And that other lines includes travel, contractual services, and supplies.
And I'll just clarify, too, when we say grants, that's the term we use, but that's the BSA. That's all the formula funding that goes to our schools.
That also includes pupil trans, child nutrition services, all of our federal programs within teaching and learning support, our Head Start, and then it also includes school debt. Page two shows you, so I gave you a summarized version of the budget on page one. Page two gives you the more detail by component between the K-12 formula programs and agency. Total, there's 344 staffing within the 17 budget. And this just gives you the detail. So if there's no questions on this page, we'll just move on to page three. And feel free to stop me if you have questions. Page three shows the comparison between FY16's management plan, what we're currently operating under, to FY17's governor's budget for general funds only. So this will include designated and undesignated general funds only. You can see there's a $12 million increase to the foundation formula. That really is the result of a fund source change between general funds. And they added more funds from the public school trust funding, and so that decreased what we needed from the actual general fund for the state. So that's why you're seeing an increase there.
And that
it also includes the BSA increase of $50.
That's basically what's reflected there, is that increase.
Yes. Overall, for the agency operations, we're seeing a 7.1% reduction overall. I'll move on because a couple pages further we'll walk through the detail of what these reductions are.
One brief question. This is Barbara. With that 7.1% reduction, when we add it to the last year or two, what does anybody know what that totals?
But compared to FY15 management plan, we've seen a 35.1% reduction to our undesignated general funds only.
Okay, in the agency.
Just in the agency. So that would be anything non-formula. Page four still gives you a comparison of FY16 management plan to the 17 budget, but for total funds. So you're actually overall going to see an increase of 1.7% when you compare the two, and mostly that is federal receipts and other receipts such as statutory designated program receipts, which we'll get to on the next page.
On that chart, I always like to just go way over to the right-hand column where you see the percentage and change, and so you can see where the increases and decreases are really quickly within percentages.
And page five, do the ins and outs from 16 management plan to 17 budget. And so this will help answer some the differences you've seen on the previous pages. Line one, we'll just go through, that's the removal of the FY16 salary adjustments. That's a reduction of $329,800. That's an unallocated reduction. We will have to allocate that for the governor's amended budget. We've been recently told this. Lines two through eight are basically technical adjustments, ins and outs from the current year to what's projected in 17. Line nine, we are removing one non-perm position. We had an administrative services. We had a position help us get through the transition for IRIS, which is the new accounting system, so the position was no longer needed. Line 10, we're removing again, in one non-perm position and the associated funding, and that was for the prototypical study that was put in under HB 278. Line 11 and 12 go together. We're putting other technical adjustments of removing the one-time item for 16 and adding it in for 17, so there is a net decrease of 25,000 between those two. Line 13, we are meeting the college and career readiness assessments of 525,000. That is designated general funds, so that, and that was funded through the higher ed fund. It sunsets at the end of 16.
This is Member Harmon. So that was that for the SAT and the ACT, or is that when?
Through the chair, yes, that is correct.
And work, Keith.
And
work. Okay, thank you.
Line 14, we're deleting three vacant positions within student and school achievement. We had deleted the funding associated with that in the FY16's management plan, so now we're just
Did we miss that call on Saturday night, or did we miss it on Sunday?
Somebody's on the phone, or we can hear people in the background. If you're not speaking, could you mute your phone? Thank you.
Line 15, still within student school achievement, there's an increase to the technical and vocational education program funding, the TVET funding of $31,200, and this is based on a projection that we get from labor, the Department of Labor. Line 16 is a student school achievement still, and this is the removal of $25,000 for the Alaska Resource Education Grant. This was all previously known as the Alaska Mineral Education Grant, so the AMRF. Line 17 reduces AMSET funding by $385,000. Line 18, we are requesting $11 million for increased federal receipt authority for our child nutrition program. We've experienced increases in actual meals served within the child nutrition program, hence the need for additional authority. Line 19 is our early learning coordination, and as we've already heard multiple times this morning, reductions to best beginnings and parents as teachers for a total of 820 reductions.
And this is Member Harmon, and I'm just curious because, again, there was a number of people that testified on that. What was the rationale behind that, or maybe I should ask that at the end of this presentation?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a good question because a lot of times people only see what comes out at the end and the removal of those items. And I did have a chance to talk to the early education advocacy group as well as the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council about it. Ultimately, what it came down to is through about a two-month process with OMB of wrestling with a budget, we ended up with some open items. Open items means items that we couldn't agree on, but items we continue to fight for. And so pre-K was one of those. And we literally ended up in a meeting with OMB and the governor and the department and wrestling with the value of those and the budget situation. You heard somebody reference earlier, one of the criteria was this in place 10 years ago when we had more money? I will tell you this, the governor was sweating bullets on this one. He did not like to remove it. It was really one of the last programs we had standing. But, you know, just looking at his responsibility to balance a budget, that's where it was. So we fought hard right to the end. The governor hated doing it, but it's just an attempt to try to find, you know, balance in this budget.
Thank you for providing background.
You bet. And there's all kinds of data, and you heard Joy speak to it, and others. There's all kinds of data and, around each of those three programs, very, very valuable. If we're going to turn the needle, especially in regards to, you know, we hear people talk about the NAEP, where we're very low nationally on the NAEP. If we want to turn the needle around and change that, we need to address those early education.
Okay. Back on page five. Line 20 was the
Chair Field.
Hello?
If I could interrupt for just a moment, Chair Field, this is Sue Hall. I just wanted, before you left this item, and also I didn't want to interrupt later, I need to leave in about 10 minutes, as I let you know in advance. But I'd like to make a comment relative to the early learning reductions. It's just such an important part of what we do, and it really is such a small part of the funding that goes through the department. You know, I understand that, at least in the past, the board's role has been relatively ceremonial with regard to the budget. But I think I'm hopeful that in the future we can revisit that, because I think in light of our statutory responsibilities, and, you know, a budget is a foundational governance tool as well, and certainly the board cannot put its judgment in place of the governor's, and the budget will always be, when it comes out at this point in the year, be the governor's. But I would hope that the board would have a larger advisory role in the future. And this is one area where I think that could be useful in, you know, in looking at the priorities of the department. I, for one, distinguish between some of the early childhood the dollars that have been spent in the past. I think we really need to look at how we expand outreach to a greater percentage of the early childhood need. And there are cost-effective ways to do that, but I think eliminating all of these dollars from the budget was not in the best interest of kids. I mean, I can understand the $2 million grant cut for $2 million to reach about 300 kids seemed to me to be very expensive, but I know that there are more cost-effective ways, and I think the board should have some of the conversation about the importance of supporting families and doing the kinds of things that can really make a difference in the early years that might be more cost-effective. So, you know, I think it's really unfortunate that this cut was made in this year's budget, and I'm hopeful that we might be able to turn that around in the future.
Hi, this is Kathleen. Can I comment on that as well?
Yeah, go ahead.
So we have down here in Ketchikan Universal Preschool, that means for everybody. And the thing is that I do not support Universal Preschool, but I do support Special Needs Preschool. And Parents with Teachers is a program that identifies early on kids that are going to need extra help. And in that regard, I feel it is a cost saving. But the other side of it is I spoke to the Parents as Teacher here, and she's having a really hard time getting kids now because of the Universal Preschool. And I understand that not all districts have that, but boy, it sure does fill a gap for, you know, districts that don't have Universal Preschool. But I hope, and I'm sure we will continue to support Special Needs Preschool and the training of daycare providers to be able to recognize children at risk for abuse and neglect, as well as educational or developmental deficits.
Right. Thanks for the comments. I know, Commissioner, we've talked a little bit about possibly trying to interject, at least like Member Holt said, an advisor role, something in a summer meeting, at least looking at the previous budget, looking forward. Is that something that you would be willing to mention?
I think it's a great idea, and probably a little bit of a conversation considering June or September. Both make sense.
Okay, great. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to in the way of in advance, but we have talked about, trying to get something in so we can have an idea and maybe advise on things that we find as important. So, okay, you can go ahead now. Sorry for the interruption.
No worries. Line 21, the Alaska State Council on the Arts, there's an increase of $800,000 in statutory designated program receipts authorization. This is for the Margaret A. Cargill Foundation grant. It's a multi-year grant. That's the 10-year grant, actually, that the Arts Council has pursued. Line 22 is a removal of $200,000 for the state facilities rent. This was a one-time item in FY16 for our dual occupancy between the state office building and the new SLAM building. Line 23 is a reduction of $672,700 for our library operations and this reduces the broadband assistant grants that go to school districts. And this only reduces the UGF portion of the whole grant.
So with regard to the broadband grant, there are other funds, federal funds?
So through the chair, Member Thompson, we have about $1.8 million that comes out of the higher ed fund.
Okay.
And then the remaining is UGF. So it was equal 1.8 and 1.8. And then we've been reducing the UGF side. And so there's about $900,000 remaining in the UGF side.
And then still about 2.7.
Correct.
Okay, so this isn't wiping it out.
Correct. This basically gives it a prorated, about 80% prorated, if everybody, all districts apply as they have been.
Okay, thank you.
And these funds do leverage pretty heavily some federal funds in E-rate.
Correct.
Got it.
Line 24, there's a request for $136,500 increase for the museum operations for general fund program receipts, and this is anticipated increases in what we refer to as gate receipts, entry into the new SLAM facility.
Hey, could you just explain, just, I assume people know, but just what it means to, it's authorization to receive the money.
Correct.
It's not a...
Correct. So we have a set authority right now to bring money in. This will allow us to actually spend an additional, anything above that will allow, this will give us the authority to spend that as well as collect it.
So it looks like we're looking for more state money, but we're not. We just need, when we get new gate receipts, or we just want need the authority to spend it.
Correct. And actually, the GF program receipts are actually a designated general fund versus an undesignated general fund. Lines 25 through 29 are for the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Line 25 is removing a little $1.1 million, the removal of the College Assessment, College Access Challenge Grant, and the Statewide Longitudinal Data System. These were federal grants that have ended. They're also removing 7 non-perm positions. Line 27 looks like a rather large increase. This is a $12.5 million. This basically is adding interagency receipt authority within the commission to accept an RSA through the corporation. So it's really giving it making it a budgeted transaction versus an unbudgeted transaction. So it increases transparency and actually makes it a little more efficient for the commission to operate. Line 28, they're requesting $720,000 for statutory designated program receipts to accept external grants for outreach and research. And then line 29 is just a technical adjustment, changing a fund source so they can reflect institutional authorization fees. So overall, we're seeing 12 less positions, and as we could see from the prior page, this is overall a 1.7 increase compared to FY16 management plan. So if there's no additional questions on page 5, we'll move on to page 6, which just gives you a reflection between 16 authorized and 17 projected for the public school funding formula. This is the foundation formula. So you can see the comparison of all the components of the program. And the last part of it, the funding sources, you can see the decrease of $4.2 million from the general funds and the increase of $17 million that's coming from the public school trust fund. Page 7 gives you by school district what we're projecting for FY17 state program allocations. And then page 8 gives you a little bit more detail on the school debt reimbursement program for FY17 on what districts are getting under that program. Pages 9 and 10 give you a little bit more detail on what all the grants are by fund source within teaching and learning support. So page 9 gives you what the student school achievement component, and then page 10 has all of the other ones. There's no questions on those pages. go to page 11, which is what we refer to as our pencil chart. So this, you can see the increases from the base student allocation from FY07 to FY17. So this does include, as we noted earlier, the $50 increase in the BSA. And on page 12 of our document goes over our the 17 capital budget. As David Neese pointed out in public testimony, there are three major maintenance grants that account total $11.2 million. One school construction grant, CASHMAC CELO, of $10.8 million. And those were based on the ranking order of the capital school construction grant fund list and the major maintenance fund list. There's a $1 million request for Mount Edgecombe's deferred maintenance. They do have a little over $8 million backlog, so this will hopefully help towards that. And then the additional capital project is the Kivalina K-12 replacement school. This is an additional $7.2 million on top of the $43.2 million they were awarded in FY16. And this fulfills what is remaining needed to fully construct that project.
And to complete the Casari case.
Yes. So that is the budget presentation, if you have any questions.
Department Chairman Fields, may I ask a question?
Yeah. Yep, go ahead.
Okay. And actually, and Commissioner, I think this is probably for you. This goes back to public testimony. I know Representative Reinbold had shared a comment, and I guess maybe you could elaborate it on for my edification, but she had mentioned that in its duties, the department can't spend any money to implement educational curriculum standards established by the Common Core, and felt that we weren't following that. So I guess what's your perspective on that provision of the law, and do you think we should maybe more clearly define what it means by regulation, or I'll leave it open to you for comment.
I think you have to go back and look a little bit at the legislative intent when that language was put in place. There were a lot of comments around it, but the person who, the author of that language, made a statement that this is not to stop what we're doing. This is to kind of put a hedge between us and federal kind of overreach and the Common Core to keep us from going that direction. At the time, Anchorage had already adopted the Common Core, and the legislators from Anchorage had asked the question to each other and to me, you know, will this stop you from working with the Anchorage School District? The conversations around that were, you know, it won't. So our understanding, and based on the intent of the language that we heard during the testimony, was that this is not to stop the standards we have in place, but it is to keep us from moving into, you know, additional, you know, into federal overreach and the Common Core.
That's a question for you. I mean, do you think we need a regulation around this? Because quite honestly, and I understand, I hear what you're saying, but I guess I don't understand it, because I think one could argue, and maybe this is what I heard, that, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, Alaska has some standards. It's not exactly identical Common Core, but it's substantially similar to Common Core. You know, most of the standards are very similar to Common Core standards. So I guess I'm just trying to understand what the legislature obviously put this in place for a reason. I guess I'm trying to understand what that reason is, and do we need to clarify for the greater public out there? So I guess, do you think we should more clearly define what it means by regulation, or is this something that maybe the legislature needs to clarify for us, or do you think it's crystal clear?
You know, I think probably the first step would be for the legislature to clarify for us. I know what Representative Reinbold spoke to, and she's not the only one, but there are other legislators who seem to be clear in regards to, you know, still being able to support districts with our current standards. Interestingly, when we look at, you know, funding, it's not a prohibition against districts spending money, just simply deed And actually, we're one of the few states that didn't receive an appropriation to help districts implement new standards. So about the only place we really worked to implement standards was in regards to some trainings we did in regards to that. So there hasn't been, aside from that, really hasn't been much money spent even to implement Alaska standards, relatively speaking.
But has there been any, and again, maybe this may be a topic for a different time, but I know it relates to the budget. So has there been any money spent, do you believe, on implementing the standards here?
Well, like I said, we've done trainings. We haven't done any recently because they were largely done the first couple of years that states were trying to understand, or districts were trying to understand what the standards were and how to implement them. So we just did trainings on what they were. We helped districts and teachers walk through them. But we haven't spent any money aside from some of those trainings. It's been relatively nominal.
Well, yeah, and again, this is Member Harmon. I guess I'll leave it to you folks, but I guess I just want to make sure, you know, how we're set up here in Alaska. The Alaska Constitution gives the legislature the power to sort of manage education in Alaska, and they put the laws in place. And, of course, we're under the executive branch, and they've set up this system whereby we have to, as you know, because I know you're doing it in the other areas, and you're very sincere about doing it, is enforcing the laws that have been put in place, whether we like them or not. So I just want to make sure that we're doing that as regards to this, just because it has come up a couple of times, Commissioner. So I just wanted to bring it up since we were talking about the budget.
No, and I think that's very true. We do have a responsibility. It has nothing to do with what we like, but we do have a responsibility to implement the law as intended and as written. I just haven't, aside from a couple legislators, I haven't heard that concern, aside from a couple, but I can surely follow up. There are legislators that were here at the time it was done, and I can surely pursue that with some leadership.
If you could pursue that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
This is Barbara. I have a comment back to John. My understanding is that the department helped develop with a lot of input the Alaska standards, and yes, in many cases they are similar, but they, to me, are not the Common Core. And when I believe the legislature determined that the state was not to spend money on the Common Core, it was those, I want to say, federal Common Core standards that were being promoted by the U.S. Department of Education, chief state school officers, and ACHIEVE for states to adopt. And many states did adopt, and Alaska was one of four initially that did not adopt those Common Core standards. And again, they may be similar, but I would argue that for certain standard areas, in math in particular, how many standards do you have for algebra or some other little subset of math? So I'm not surprised that they are similar, but the department has done training to implement the Alaska standards, and at no time have they been referred to as the Common Core, and again, I believe they are not.
And I just to kind of tie this up, I would say I have had a few legislators ask about the intent, so it's probably a good idea to go to the legislature and find out, okay, what was the original intent? So I think you got the right line, Commissioner, and that's probably where we should leave that and try to see if we can get some resolve on it.
Thank you, Chairman Fields.
Yeah. Okay, anything else on the budget? Okay, well, thank you for your report, Heidi, and we're on to the next item, which is Secondary Education Graduate Certificate Program. Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair Fields. The board is being asked to approve a Secondary Education Graduate Certificate Program at the University of Alaska Southeast. As I've mentioned to you in the past, UAS has been traditionally very responsive to the needs of educators and the needs for particular programs. This is another one where it surely seems that they are trying to address
what we need to raise up teachers in Alaska. So I'm just going to turn it right over to Dr. McCauley.
Thank you. For the record, this is Susan McCauley, the Director of Teaching and Learning Support. I'm going to provide a very brief introduction and then turn it over to two other people who are here in the room. The reason this is coming to the board is connected to Regulation 4AAC 12308, Approval of In-State Educator Preparation Programs. This regulation states that a regionally accredited institution of higher education in this state may apply to the board for approval of teacher preparation programs. And so any time that there is a significant change to or the creation of change to an existing program or the creation of a new program, that per regulation is required to come to the Board of Education for your approval. Before turning it over to Sandra Meredith, the Administrator for Teacher Certification, and Dr. Scott Christensen, an Administrator with University of Alaska Southeast, I would also note that what is going to be requested today does seem to be in keeping with or at least related to your strategic priority 3 in your new strategic plan connected to providing high quality educators for Alaska students, and purposefully and proactively considering programs that are likely to reduce barriers and increase the possibility of additional applicants for teaching positions in Alaska. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sandra Meredith and Dr. Christensen.
For the record, this is Sandra Meredith, Administrator for Teacher Certification and Education. I just would like to say that we have reviewed the proposal by you at, by the University of Alaska Southeast, and we have put in the cover memo some information for the board about what was seen in those proposals. I'm just going to open it up and allow Scott Christensen, Dr. Scott Christensen, I believe Deb Lowe's on the line as well, to answer any questions the board may have about the changes to this program.
Thank you. The UAS School of Ed is working really hard to try to produce more quality graduates with initial licensure, and we're looking at that in every way that we can. So when I started running the Master of Arts in Teaching program, it was evident that we only had one path for secondary ed, and that was a master's degree, and 36 credits, and you needed to be on campus in the summer. So we brought together an advisory council with superintendents and principals and teachers, and looked at what we were doing to try to figure out a way so that we could be more flexible. So the graduate certificate program will allow people to bring credit for prior learning. So people that have taught at a private school or internationally or in a program like Outward Bound or from a Native Heritage Institute that have done formal teaching, or if they already have a master's degree or significant coursework, they could just earn the graduate certificate, which results in certification in any area of licensure for secondary ed. And we're getting a lot of calls. There's a lot of people that are interested in it, people that don't want a master's degree or can't afford it, or it's not accessible to them because they can't, you know, come to campus for a semester. So the goal was something more affordable, more accessible. But since we have the same evaluation, same assessment as we do with the master's degree, we're maintaining the standards for the program.
Great, thank you. Any comments or questions?
This is Barbara. I think this is a real good move to provide flexibility and options to people who want to become teachers and, like you said, may either not have the time or resources to get through a master's program. So I think your standards are high and you're maintaining those standards, and I think it provides a much needed option to get people into the classroom perhaps quicker. So I thank you.
And Chairman Fields, this is Member Hartman. I would agree with Member Thompson. I think I like this. I think it's good.
Great. Any other comments? I would just chime in and say I agree with both the other members. It's a, thanks for working on this and coming up with other alternatives. And you're exactly right, Dr. McCauley. This is working under a strategic plan, so thank you for pointing that out. Any other comments before we move on?
This is only the beginning.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next item. Going out, let's see, regulation to go out for public comments, district's educator evaluation systems.
Thank you, Chair Fortfields. The board is being asked to open a period of public comment on regulations related to district educator evaluation systems. I heard several people speak to that today, all in support of this being a first step towards changing up our evaluation systems that we have currently in place where it ties student learning to a teacher's evaluation. I'll go ahead and turn it over to Dr. McCauley at this time.
Thank you. For the record, Susan McCauley, Director of Teaching and Learning Support. I want to, before talking specifically about what this regulation repeal will do, is to note that if you take action on this today and putting this out for public comment, it will not address, that action alone will not address the breadth of public comment you heard today, and I'll explain that so that it's very clear. In light of the very recent ESEA reauthorization of the Every Student Succeeds Act, we felt that we needed to move quickly to address regulation requirements that are on the books right now and having implication for districts in terms of implementation. The very first requirement related to educator evaluation that is relevant is the one that is before you today, and that is the requirement that all districts pilot with all certificated staff the use of student achievement data as part of an educator's evaluation during the current school year. If nothing is done with this regulation, then they will be obligated by law to do that. In light of the possible, I would say probable, reconsideration of our regulations related to educator evaluation, we thought that it was prudent to reconsider that piloting requirement right now. Doing that, it's a very simple regulation package, so to speak. It simply goes into the section of the regulation that requires the pilot and repeals it. It, however, does nothing with regard to the other requirements, and it is likely that the board will want to take those other requirements up in the very near future for consideration. The next date that will kick in, so to speak, with regard to those requirements is that all districts need to have approved. Sorry, there are sirens in the background. There's a fire truck going by. And an ambulance. So the next date that is relevant is July 1st, 2016, and that is the date by which districts need to have adopted an evaluation system that utilizes as part of an educator's evaluation student achievement data. And so if we don't address the broader breadth of those regulation packages, that is the next deadline that will kick in. And so, I think it's very likely that the board will want to take up, in light of the lack of requirements in that area in ESSA and in light of what you've heard from stakeholders in Alaska, you'll want to take those up soon in terms of that new requirements kicking in. However, we think that will require for you a fuller presentation, a fuller understanding of what is in that regulation section. And so for today, we simply wanted to deal with we wanted to address the deadline that is currently facing districts in terms of a piloting requirement that has implication for them right now. And let me just make sure I've covered all of my notes. I have. And so I will just stop right there and see if there are any questions or clarifications.
Any questions?
Yes, this is Board Member Thompson. my question is then, at the March meeting, would we be likely to have that kind of presentation on the next step that we would put out? I'm assuming it's another repeal option.
Through the chair, Member Thompson, that would be our recommendation. And to consider specifically what the SSA requires or doesn't require, and then to consider what the board wants to do in terms of a student achievement requirement at all, and to seek public comment around that. I think we can anticipate that there will be significant public comment related to that that can inform ultimately the board's decision, which would be, when is it June? Is the next meeting? Is that correct? March and then June. So, yes.
If I could just add as well, I mentioned that it's really a first step towards getting where we want to be. And this too fits really well into what I believe is one of the board's goals in returning some local control on how they determine the best way to evaluate their teachers. You'll see some communications coming out from me later this week in that regard. We strongly advocate for high quality teachers in every classroom for every student. But you heard from a lot of people, and you'll hear from me, that this was a very onerous part of getting our waiver and getting out from some of the parts of No Child Left Behind. And I think now it's time to return some of that local control. And interestingly, it's not a part of the SSA. It's absent from it. So we don't have, we can move relatively quickly in getting where we need to be in regards to teacher evaluations.
Great. Any other comments, questions on this item? Okay, hearing none, I think it's a good step forward, and that's good. I think we should have that on the March meeting and move that forward, because obviously, yeah, it is a concern for superintendents and districts. So thanks for seeing that coming down the pike and getting in our schedule. Moving into the business meeting, regulation to go out for public comment to district educator evaluation systems. Commissioner?
Yes, so now we'll move right into, from the work session into the business portion. And Chair Fields, the board is being asked to open a period of public comment on regulations related to district educator evaluation systems.
This is Board Member Thompson. Can't speak. I move the State Board of Education and Early Development open a period of public comment for Regulation 4 AAC 19.010K, Purpose and Scope of Evaluations.
Member Harmon seconds.
Okay, we have moved and seconded. Any discussion?
I wish that we could ask people to bring suggestions for how to evaluate teachers that tie to student performance in some degree or another, because that's kind of the bottom line, that they're learning. And anyway, I just would request suggestions from the people making public comments.
Right, and I would imagine we'll probably get some of those, as I think Kevin Shipley brought up, that they would still want that as a part, as a piece, and so I think those will come up. But again, it's a local control is always important, and I think Commissioner mentioned that, is we want to try to keep it as local as we can. We can help them with that, and you're right, suggestions are always good, and I think a lot of these superintendents talk amongst themselves and figure those things out as well. Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call, please.
Second Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Gallahorn?
Yes.
Member Yar?
Yes.
Member Burris?
Yes.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Member Harmon?
Yes.
Colonel Knoll?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hull. She did step out. And then Chair Fields.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And item 4B, which was the approved the December 10th and 11th, 2015 minutes.
I make my motion?
Sure.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Chairman Fields. I move to approve the minutes with the following modifications. First, a reflection on agenda item 14D that I abstain from the main motion vote, as I believed it was not appropriate to pass a resolution on legislation that did not currently exist. And number two, under the board comment section for my comment, it was only partially completed, but I'd like it to be finished to state that I was looking forward to Deed's assessment of ESA, ESSA.
This is Board Member Thompson. I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, roll call, please.
Colonel Nall?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Hartman?
Yes.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Member Gallahorn?
Yes.
Member Yar?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hall? Member Burris?
Yes.
Chair Fields?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And then the consent agenda minus, obviously, the 5C approved it. Chairman, do you have a motion?
This is Board Member Thompson. I move the State Board of Education and Early Development approve the consent agenda consisting of the following: approval of the department's FY 2017 operating and capital budgets, approval of the University of Alaska Southeast Secondary Education Graduate Certificate Program, and approval of the board's January 2016 report to the legislature.
Member Hamilton seconds.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please.
Member Harmon?
Yes.
Member Gallahorn?
Yes.
Dr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Second Vice Chair Thompson?
Yes.
Member Burris?
Yes.
Colonel Nall?
Yes.
Member Yar?
Yes.
First Vice Chair Hull is absent. And Chair Fields?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, your motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And last is board comments. And I think this time I'll just, if you want to jump in and say something, say it. If you don't. So if there's any board comments, go ahead, and I'll just be last.
Member Harmon, I have a couple of comments. Actually, my first comment is a question. And Chairman Fields, based on the moratorium given by the governor against travel, will we be traveling to Juneau for our March meeting, or will it be by teleconference?
Commissioner?
Right now, I think we still have it set to where the board can travel here in March, but I think the board's going to have to determine. There are some specifics in regards to boards and commissions about minimizing that, so it's probably a conversation that will need to come up about how many meetings a year will be face-to-face.
Thank you, Commissioner. With that, I'll continue with my comments, Chairman.
Sure.
Yeah. I guess the first comment I had, and in regards to AMP, and I think we had a wonderful discussion today, but the AMP situation continues to trouble me. I know it troubles all of us. You know, although I prefer a quick end to AMP, I do understand the Commissioner's and Deed's perspective and situation here. And we'll just encourage him and the department to continue to work closely with the stakeholders and superintendents. I also had some concerns about the budget. I believe it was constructed probably in November and December when oil was still about $40 a barrel, and I know it's gone down, and we don't know where the bottom is. You know, I think it looks like a good budget. I'm afraid what might come, but I would encourage the commissioner to think about if we need to make further reductions, where those may be, and to continue to look at ways to be more efficient without losing the effectiveness we have here. for the Department of Education. I also appreciate the commissioner following up the legislature on its position related to Alaska's current standards and expenditures of money for the Common Core. And finally, I look forward to the future recommendations from DEET on how we can best implement ESA in Alaska, keeping in mind, as the commissioner mentioned, the uniqueness of our state, respecting privacy issues, and improving education. Moving forward, our strategic priorities of empowering local control, modernizing the state's education system, and ensuring high-quality educators for Alaska's children. So those are my comments, and I look forward to our March meeting.
Okay, thank you. Any other board comments? Pretty quiet out there. Okay, I'll just finish up. I just want to thank the Department of Education. I know I'm sure there are people on staff that put a lot of time into AMP, and so hearing the discussion about possibly not renewing a contract and possibly going other directions, I'm sure that's not necessarily easy. So I just want to thank them and try to give them some hope that, you know, I don't think it necessarily was totally in vain. We just got to move forward and do what's best for the state. And I know that you'll all be on board with that. And just think it was a good meeting going over. It's good we're starting to attach things to our strategic plan and where we're going. So that's always important. And I know the governor mentioned it in his state of the state, so it definitely is getting some traction. So I know John, the member Harmon has gotten a meeting together for his subcommittee, so that's a good start. And I look forward to talking to the commissioner about these two work groups with the SSA and the assessment piece moving forward. So I see hope. I see some light at the end of the tunnel. So I'm encouraged with where we're going. And yeah, the budgets are going to always be a concern, especially right now, but we'll figure out a way, and just thanks for everybody's work. If there are no other comments, I will move to adjourn with no objection. Hearing any objection? I hear no objection. We'll adjourn as of 2:17. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.